You want to become a physician assistant. You have a strong preference for an online program, and you want it to be an excellent program, preferably one with great brand recognition. Does it exist? Yes, at Yale. And the director of Yale's PA online program is our guest today. Welcome to the 298th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Today's featured resource is 10 Tips for Acceptance to a Physician Assistant Program. Download this free guide for advice on selecting the right PA program for you, writing your personal statement, interviewing effectively, and simply presenting the best application you possibly can. Download 10 Tips for Acceptance to a Physician Assistant Program from accept.com/298download. And we'll also include a link in the show notes at accept.com/298. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to Admissions Straight Talk, Jim Van Rie, director of Yale PA Online. Jim became a PA in 1989 and, after several years of working in patient care, returned to academia. Since 2006, he has been a physician assistant program director at Wake Forest, Northwestern, and now Yale, which he joined in 2013 as director of the Yale Physician Associate Program, which is the traditional in-class version of Yale PA Online. In 2016, he became director of the Yale PA Online Program. Jim, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you for having me back again. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Now, can you give us an overview of Yale's online physician assistant program?
Sure. It's really, we talk about the word online. It's really, I like to use the word blended curriculum. It's more of a blended program. And by that, we mean we use a lot of different methodologies to teach. We have synchronous and asynchronous coursework, so video lectures. We do a lot of small group things. We use a lot of problem-based learning in small groups. We also have immersions where the students come to campus for a week at a time, and we do a lot of those hands-on skills, things that need to be taught face-to-face. And then we have the clinical rotations, just like every other PA program in the country. So the idea was to kind of mesh these different components, these different pedagogies. So we do lectures, we just happen to do them online. We do small groups, we just happen to do them online. So we just using the technology to its fullest extent.
Okay. Now, you talked about the immersions and the clinical and the didactic portion of the program and the clinical rotation program portion of the program. Is that the same as a traditional PA program?
Yeah, it's what we do is with our lecture version of the curriculum that most programs do, we just happen to record those. It's sort of like we flip the classroom. You'll hear a lot of people talk about a flipped classroom. So we recorded the lectures, and then when we do the live sessions with the students online, they're more application. We do a lot of problem-based learning in small groups where the students will go through a case, do a history, do a physical exam, order labs, and they apply the material they learned in the lectures. So they watch a lecture, they get PowerPoint slides, they get handouts just like everyone else. But in our live sessions, we utilize that time face-to-face with them with application. It's really important in my mind and in the faculty here to show and to teach the students how to utilize the information. I think every PA program does a fantastic job in medical education, giving students the information they need, teaching the students in the short period of time we have to educate them how to utilize that material. We really rely on the clinical year to do that. We're trying to do that in the first year. So we're utilizing all of our face-to-face time with application, not with just delivering content.
And about how often do you have an immersion? And with the immersions, I guess everybody, for the non-immersions, everybody's wherever they're living, right? And
that's
for the
correct.
Immersions, they all fly to Yale, correct?
They fly or drive here, yes. They can come for a week. We do our first immersion 10 weeks into the program. And the focus of that immersion is anatomy. They go to our anatomy lab. And the other part of that immersion is physical exam skills. Then they come back for an immersion right prior to going out on rotations, about 12 months into the curriculum. And that one focuses on procedural things. How do you draw blood? How do you give a shot? How do you start an IV? Those sorts of things. And then the last immersion is right before graduation, where it's basically our chance to assess, do a final assessment to make sure that they're ready not only to take boards, but they're ready for clinical practice.
And did I remember correctly that you take a system approach to the education, the didactic portion of the curriculum?
A lot of places will front load their curriculum with basic sciences. And then we expect the student 6 months later to recall the basic science of cardiology. What we do is we divide our curriculum up by organ system. So for example, in cardiology, they're learning about congestive heart failure, about the disease, but just prior to that, they had their physiology lecture on the physiology of how the heart pumps and learning things like Starling's law and the pathophys of congestive heart failure so that they learn the basic science. And then within days, instead of months, they're actually applying that to clinical medicine and to these cases that we do in the small groups. It's done that way to reinforce and help with knowledge retention.
Okay. About how many people are in each class at ELPA Online?
Because of the way we set it up with the accrediting body, our first cohort was 48 students. We actually only took 42 students the first cohort. I didn't want to fill a class for the sake of filling a class. That's not what this is about. It was about making sure we had the best applicants, the best students we could get. So we didn't feel an obligation to fill the whole class. The second cohort, we were allowed to go up to 60, and we do have 59 with this cohort.
Okay. And that's, and do you plan to keep it pretty much at that size, or do you intend to grow, or do you know?
Well, we're hopefully plan to grow, but right now we're more interested in keeping it at 60 and seeing what our outcomes look like. What do our students do on rotations? What do our students do with boards? What do the students do, you know, when we do the end of the curriculum evaluations, when we see what the preceptors say, when we see what the employers say? So we're going to probably hold steady at 60. If we do go up at all in the next few years, it'll be really small increments, small numbers, but we want to get some outcomes before we make any decisions.
Have you had a graduating class yet or not yet?
Not yet. We took our first cohort in January of 2018. So they just started clinical rotations. They're in week two of clinical rotations. And we just took our second cohort of first year students, the didactic year. They started January 7th. So we don't graduate our first class until May of 2020.
Wow. All right. Well, it's coming. It's coming.
It's coming. It'll come faster than we realize.
Right. What does it take to get into the program?
The same as every other program.
Which is?
You got to have the grades and things to be, you've got to have the academic skills to be able to be successful in PA school. That goes without saying. Our students tend to be a little bit older. They tend to have a little more clinical experience coming into the program. So we're looking for people who, you know, they've really thought this through. You know, it's not, you know, it takes some time to know whether you want to be a PA, what you want to do, because a lot of our students are career changers. Again, it's going back to the old days. When I went to PA school, I had been a medical technologist for years and then made a switch to a whole other career being a PA. That for years went by the wayside, and it was people fresh out of undergrad going to PA school. What we're seeing in our program is a swing back. Sure, we get some of the ones fresh out of undergrad, but we're seeing more and more who are second careers. So we just want to make sure that they know they've thought through this decision, that, you know, they're making a big decision, a big career change, and the effects it can have on family and things. We just want to make sure that they thought this through. So part of our interview process is about how do they think they can meet our mission? And more importantly, since we're online, how do they feel they're going to be able to handle an online curriculum? You know, it's not like sitting in a classroom, having somebody come in and talk to you every day. You really have to be self-disciplined.
Yeah.
To be successful.
Right. And in terms of experience, do you want people to have had clinical exposure? And how much do you, I mean, you actually, Yale lays out very clearly what it would like to see, or its recommendations for experience. Could you review those, and how many of your students really meet those recommendations?
Sure. We strongly encourage, we don't require, we strongly recommend that they have at least 500 hours. Mm-hmm. Our average student coming in the first cohort and second cohort, if you combine those two together, averaged about 8,000 hours. So if a full-time job is 2,000 hours a year, our students had about 4 years of clinical experience. Now, the range was really varied. We had somebody with zero.
Wow.
But they had been in the military and had done a lot of things in the military that we felt would be a great transition into the PA world. Mm-hmm. We also had an applicant with 69,000 hours of clinical experience. They were in there, I won't say how old they were, but they had had years of experience in the healthcare field. And so, but our average is around 8,000. We're trying to look at more the whole applicant. What do they bring to the program? Not just, is there a magic number of hours?
Okay. And when we spoke about 5 years ago, obviously the program at that point, I think it was almost, it was in the planning stages, right? Clearly.
That's correct. Yep.
And you've already, you know, you've started two cohorts. You're well into it. How is it evolving? How is it changing?
It's been a very interesting process. As a matter of fact, today is the 5-year anniversary of the first meeting we had to start this program.
Oh, wow.
5 years ago today was the first time I met with a group where we actually sat around a table and said, what about doing something like this? And talking to the company who helps us put this program to bring it to fruition. Today, 5 years ago today. Over that 5 years, we've gone through a lot. We've gone through accreditation. We've gone through development of the curriculum, development of the clinical sites, hiring faculty. It's been, to me, it's been a labor of love. It's probably the most exciting thing I've done in my career. And we're finding that there's even more things that we can do. We started dabbling in virtual reality with some virtual reality related to congenital heart disease. So there's just so much more to go. And we're also working, we just did a scenario with our students where we use standardized patients. Normally those are done face-to-face in the same room. We did them online. So we had our students practice how to break bad news and how to do shared decision-making using the computer, using the, you know, Zoom and Skype and programs like that to have the students work with standardized patients. And it was, the standardized patients' comments were excellent. They really enjoyed it. They felt that they made a connection with the student. It felt like they were able to deliver what they needed to deliver. And we're waiting for all the official feedback from the students. We did our first session last Friday, but the initial feedback we got was that they felt engaged in the process as well, that they got out of it what they needed. So I think this will really, we're really looking at changing the way we typically think about delivering medical education.
Okay. How does the program, speaking of delivering medical education, how does the program handle, let's say, labs or, well, I know you set up preceptorships and for clinical exposure, but can you go into that a little bit more, both the lab element and the clinical?
Sure. Well, we have the immersion. So they come here to campus. They use the Yale Simulation Center. We use the Yale Anatomy Lab. But the other thing that we did is we developed a special program called CEED, C-E-E-D, and it stands for Clinical Experience in Early Didactic. And what it is, after they've been in the program for about 10 weeks, they've gotten their feet wet, they know they're kind of in a routine, they know how to plan, they know how to study, they know they've got a kind of a system in place. We find clinical sites in their community where they go a half an afternoon, a half a day a week, where they get to go into those clinical settings and utilize the skills they're learning, practice physical exam skills. They get to be mentored by another clinician, whether it's a PA, a nurse practitioner, a physician. They get to practice physical exam skills. They get to practice history taking skills. They get to work with other members of the healthcare team to see how that team works together. So there's an experience even early on. We didn't want to wait for the clinical year for the students to get some patient exposure. We wanted to do that early on. So we developed that as well. So that's part of the clinical experience, the clinical rotations, and then the immersions for the hands-on. The interesting thing with the way we deliver it is that we have the students watch a lot of these things ahead of time. So if they come prepared, like watch a video of how to do something, that's way when they come to the actual session and they come prepared, having reviewed the materials and watched the videos, you can get a much bigger bang for your time with the hands-on time because they've come prepared. They know the nuances and it's really just practicing the skill. So we've been very fortunate being able to do what we needed to do from a hands-on standpoint during those immersions.
And since everybody, all your students are scattered all over the place, by the way, I don't know if you realize, but Accepted is an entirely virtual company. So I'm somewhat familiar with, not with all the details of what you have, but in our own little world with working with lots of different people virtually. Are you finding that students, in terms of finding the clinical rotations that they need, do they ever have trouble doing that in their location?
Well, we've just started our clinical year, so we're early in the process. We have found a number of sites around the country already. We have a large number of sites, more than enough to meet the demand. The problem is we never know where the student's going to live when they come, the ones we accept to the program. So we do have to find some once they get into the program. What we've been able to do is I have a placement team whose sole job is to just find clinical placement sites. For the month of January, two-thirds of the students for their first rotation this month of January, two-thirds of the students are within 25 miles of their home.
Oh, that's wonderful.
About 10% are between 25 and 50. Another 10% are between 50 and 75, and a very few are greater than 75 miles. We have one who's driving a fair distance, but that was because that's where they wanted to do their rotation. It was a referral from the student. That's where they wanted to go. It wasn't that we said you have to go there. It was something that they had kind of wanted to do. So we've been very fortunate to be able to find sites relatively close. Now, it all depends on where the student lives. If the student lives in a really rural community, and they want to do a cardiothoracic surgery rotation, there may not be a cardiothoracic surgeon for hundreds of miles. So that has to be taken into account as well.
Right. Now, you mentioned earlier that PA students tend to be a little bit more mature than, or the Yale PA online students tend to be a little bit more mature than perhaps in the more traditional PA programs. When you were designing Yale PA Online, were you drawing a lot from your own personal experience as somebody who became a PA after another career? Or, you know, I don't remember exactly how many years out you were from college, but you definitely were more experienced.
I don't know if I would consider our students more mature. I think mature is not, our students are older. I'm not sure that maturity necessarily is a, you know, being an older student is necessarily means you're more mature. I mean, I have a lot of people who consider me in some areas being rather immature with some things. So I'm not sure that that's a relationship. Our students are definitely on average older. They average about 32, 33 years of age, and they do come with more clinical experience. And I think because of what we wanted to do with this program, I think that was a natural selection to get the older student because we're offering a student who maybe can't move to a campus program, is in a part of the country that there isn't a PA program, or if one is close by, it's just not close enough because of family concerns and issues, and maybe they have children. So we're able to give them an opportunity to go to PA school that might not exist. So I think it naturally tends to be an older student because they're the ones who maybe don't have the opportunity to move. I know a lot of 22-year-olds and younger, and
they're footloose and fancy free.
You know, under 25, having some kids that they can't wait to get up and move. So I think our group just naturally migrated that way because of the program.
Makes sense. Now, Yale Online does not use the CASPA application or service. Why and what is the application process like at Yale Online?
We just wanted to make it simpler. Okay. We were a little bit different program. We have our application cycle open year-round, and we wanted to make it a little bit easier and cheaper. They fill in our application. It's a $50 fee. Basically, they fill in some demographic info. They fill in some academic info. Where they went to school, they send us the transcripts, we evaluate the transcripts, they don't have to enter all their grades like they do in CASPA. But more importantly, as part of our process, we interview everybody that we want to interview online. We don't make them come to New Haven, Connecticut. So we were trying to make the process easier for applicants to PA school. I know if you're doing a bricks and mortar program, you really, as a student, you do want to come and see the program. You want to see what the classroom looks like.
Right.
You want to meet the faculty. You want to see what the looks like. I get that. We don't have that. We do stuff online. So we want to show the students our technology. So we do all of our interviews online. And fortunately, it does save them a lot of money not having to fly cross country or to come to Connecticut.
Makes sense. I mean, yeah, for sure. Can you discuss the three required essays that are part of the Yale PA Online application?
Sure. The essays were put in place to kind of help us and identify students who would fit with our program, but also they were created to help the student identify whether we're really a match for them. So one of the questions that we ask is related to their previous experience with online education. We want to make sure that the students have thought through what it means to be an online student. You're not going to be going to class. You're not going to be having professors standing in front of you reminding you that something is due tomorrow. You've really got to be a self-motivated, self-directed learner. So that was one of our questions. One of our other questions is related to how they're going to help, how they're going to meet the mission of our program. Our mission is related to, you know, high quality patient-centered care, interdisciplinary teams, primary care. So with with striving for continuous learning and professional development. So we want to make sure that they've thought that through. How are they going to help us meet our mission and what we want to do? And then our other question has to do with diversity. What's their experience with diversity? We have students from all over the country. So we just want them to think through these areas. Yes, we're using it as and scoring it to see how well they fit with our program. But it really had even more of an impact to make sure students were thinking through these things before they made a decision to come to our program. So it really had a twofold outcome that we were looking at.
Okay. Now, Yale PA Online is currently accepting applications for the cohort starting in January 2020. The early decision deadline for that cohort is approaching rapidly and will happen on April 15th. The priority deadline is July 1, and the final deadline is September 1. What are the differences between these deadlines, and what advice would you have for someone starting the ELPA application?
Why we have the three different deadlines. One, we always want people to apply early. We have an early decision deadline, which is April 15th. This is our priority, our early decision deadline. That is to tell an applicant, we're going to make a decision shortly thereafter. You submit the stuff, we're going to decide right there. Are you in? Are you not in? So the student will know really early in the process. They won't be having to wait 8-9 months while we go through other applications and review other students and maybe make a decision. It could take a while. So if they do the early decision, they will know. Yes, no, occasionally a maybe, a wait list. The priority deadline is the same thing. The earlier they get it in, the quicker we want a turnaround response. We're trying to get all of our decisions made within 4 to 8 weeks from the time that somebody submitted something. Applicants typically will wait till the very last day to submit stuff. That's just the nature of the beast when people apply to programs. They tend to wait. There's an advantage if you apply early. We're going to give you a decision early, so apply early. So we wanted students and applicants to be able to get a decision early. And to be honest, we also wanted to be able to kind of even out our workload a little bit and not have them all come in at the very end.
Makes sense. And what advice would you give for somebody who's sitting down and starting to prepare an application for the ELPA online program and, let's say, aiming for the April 15th deadline?
Be yourself, okay? A lot of times I read files, I read essays, and then I interview people, and they're almost trying to tell me what they think I want to hear. And it's pretty obvious a lot of times. You need to be who you are. That's who we're accepting into the program. That's who's going to show up the first day. Don't try to answer questions or fill in the essays or answer the interview questions by trying to think, okay, what does Jim want to hear as the answer? What does Yale Online want to hear as the answer? Be yourself. Give us your answer. Be you. That's usually my biggest piece of advice I give to you. Got this far. You've got great GPAs. You've got great GREs. You've got an interview. Don't just be yourself. Be who you are going to be. That tells us a lot more than you trying to answer something the way you think we want to hear it. We can usually read through that pretty quick, especially the essays. And even the interviews. So that's usually my biggest thing I tell applicants is just be yourself. Answer the question truthfully, honestly, and then don't be afraid to ask questions. We've gotten a lot of great questions about our program from applicants, like, you know, it's online. How are you going to do this? How are you going to do this? This is different than other programs. How are you doing this? You're making a very big decision for the rest of your life where you want to go to PA school. You need to make sure you have all the information you need. I also encourage applicants to make sure that they check out the programs they're applying to. Go to not only their website, but go to the accreditation websites to see what's been said and done about those programs that you're applying to. It's one thing to be a program that may be next door, but if it's not a fit for you, it's going to be miserable. So make sure that you know everything you need to know about the program that you're applying to and that it's going to be a really good fit for you.
Right, right. That's critical. I can't tell you how many admissions officers, direct program directors from a broad spectrum of programs have said, please don't write what you think we want to hear.
I see that so much. It's almost, yeah. I can read them and I go, oh boy, they're answering. They know my background is in online education. We ask them an online question. They're telling me exactly what they're quoting things in the literature that they think I want to hear. I want to hear what you think, not what some guy wrote in an article a year ago, 5 years ago, or 10 years ago.
Right, right. Now, what about the applicant who, let's say, for whatever reason, isn't quite ready to apply for this upcoming cohort, but would like to become a PA and for personal reasons or whatever reasons, prefers the online version, is seriously considering Yale's PAA online program. But again, they're thinking ahead. They want to have the optimum kind of profile. What advice would you give that applicant or that potential applicant thinking ahead a year or so down the line?
Reach out to us. I have a admissions team. That's all they do. You can go to our website and find the contact information and talk to our admissions team. You don't have to be just applying for this next cycle to talk to them. You can even go to our website and enter your information and have them call you, okay, if you want to know more about the program. But get in the system early. We do a number of webinars throughout the course of a year that's not just for people who are applying for the next cycle, but for people who are applying in future cycles. We're not just working with the students and the applicants who are applying for the class of 2020, but we're more than happy to work with the class that's applying in 2021, 22, 23. Now, understand that we're going to try to focus most of our attention to the students who are applying now because we want to make sure we get their questions answered right away because they're applying this cycle. But that doesn't mean we won't talk to the people who are applying for future cycles. So reach out to the admissions team. Call them on the phone, have them call you back, set up a time to chat and talk, and they can look at what you've done as an applicant already and kind of help you develop a plan going forward to how you can put forward the best application that you can put forward.
Okay, sounds good. What would you have liked me to ask that I didn't ask?
Prior to the question that I always wish people would ask most often is why? Why did you do this online program?
Okay, consider it asked.
Oh, well, I don't want to answer it. No. the reason I did this is because not everyone can move to go to PA school. Right. Not everyone gets accepted maybe to the program that may be close by. I think if you really want to be a PA, we need primary care providers, whether it's nurse practitioners, PAs, physicians. We need primary care providers so bad. There's such a shortage that I hate to see an applicant who, you know, I really want to do this. This would be I would be so good at being a PA, but my spouse has a great job. I have kids in a great school system. I can't just pack them up and move. We're giving students like that an opportunity. And you'd be amazed at how many in our cohort fall into that category. We like keeping them where their support system is. Going to PA school is hard enough. Packing up and moving away from your support system doesn't make it any easier. So we like the idea of keeping them local, keeping them within their own local support system. And we've been fortunate with the technology to be able to deliver the curriculum to them wherever they are and to find clinical placement sites wherever they are. So the goal here was to help people who wanted to be PAs be able to go to PA school. That was the big reason for doing this.
Well, it sounds to me like you're accomplishing your goal. That's for sure.
I hope so.
Yeah, it's a fantastic opportunity. Jim, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential PAs and applicants learn more about the Yale PA online program?
Well, they can go to our website. It's paonline.yale.edu. And okay. They can go there, they can click on a button for more information, or they can just go around the website and find the information they may need.
Sounds good. We'll include links in the show notes at accept.com/298 to the Yale PA Online program, as well as to related articles and podcasts, including Accepted's free guide, 10 Tips for Acceptance to a Physician Assistant Program. Listener, thank you too for joining Jim Benry and me for our 298th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with program directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.